Welcome back to Gathering Mist. We're talking about a passage in Yashaya 28, but it's not very far from one in Yashaya 17 and 18. And the fact that it follows it, I think, is interesting. We were speaking of Palmyra, which is about 125 miles from Damascus. Kirk, what do you think that there's a tie-in between the prophecies regarding the destruction of Syria, and Syria becoming a heap of ruins, and the these temples in Palmyra becoming a heap of ruins, and of ultimately Yahweh wiping away, providing this warning to those who are overtly religious?
Well, Ephraim is on the right on the border of Syria, so yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Of course, I like the part about the twisted
heap of ruins. Yeah, twisted heap of ruins. And boy, if you look at Palmyra and the ruins, they do have a twisted heap of ruins there. But you know, it speaks to the fall of all of Syria, and this is Ephraim's influence in that area, and you could not have a more of a melting pot of the world's religion than what we find in Palmyra. I mean, it is Babylonian, it is Assyrian, it is Persian, it is primarily Greek, it is Roman, it has a significant Egyptian influences religiously, and then it became a Byzantine community with Roman Catholicism, and then it became influence dominated by Islam.
Can I address just one thing that you and you and Glenn were talking about? You know, to me, because I grew up in Australia and I studied the British Empire a lot,
mm-hmm.
and in fact, we were listening to the Stan show for that more than anything else for that reason, because so that's where we ran across you, if you remember.
Yeah, Dr. Stan. Mm-hmm.
But my take on history was as Rome fell and the Roman mm-hmm. Church continued to be a powerhouse, even though it was split west and east, it did eventually get very, very strong back in Italy again. And mm-hmm. if you trace that history of its power over, its control over France or influence over France, mm-hmm. Spain,
yeah.
and Portugal,
well. Mm-hmm.
The German city-states, yeah.
Germania.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Germany, and also the Netherlands and the Belgium, they fought wars back and forth. But they had, and yes, there was an attempt to unify Europe as a Holy Roman Empire thing, too. But that influence of what they were and what they believed was, you know, a predominant belief system in Europe.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I can't quite hear him.
Yeah, I can't either.
Okay. So, and then when the English break away,
mm-hmm.
they still carry all the way up to Queen Victoria. Her empire is so dominant over Europe because of her land holdings and her, mm-hmm. her marriages and so forth to control all these various houses like the Tsars and so forth. Khazar, Tsar,
yeah.
Caesar.
And she, by the way, was overtly satanic. You look at her official portrait, and it's everything about her, surrounding her and her gown, are all occultic figures. All of her advisors were occultic. So she is, she is very satanic in her affinity.
Now, extrapolate a little bit further. They can't hold it together. The empire can't be held together, so they form a commonwealth. But their dominance over those commonwealth countries are huge.
Right.
For all the different treaties and reasons and so forth.
Right.
And their influence, the Rhodes Scholars, you know, the Rhodes Scholarships and all, and, you know, what those were all about. But also all that money, they realized they couldn't hold it together, so they just simply moved it to New York. and said, okay, you guys have got to take over because we can't afford this anymore.
You're right. And America can't either, but we've become the blunt end of the stick for British imperialism.
So when to prove that Yah said what he said and he means what he said and he doesn't lie,
mm-hmm.
when he says Rome will take over to the end, I mean, I don't see any difference between what they're doing now and what they did then. I mean, this is the way it grew, and it's still there.
Correct. Yeah, it's whether it was the Holy Roman Empire that grew throughout Europe as a as an outgrowth of Theodosius and his schemes to make Christianity as a religion, and the monarchy, the imperial nature of Rome synonymous for control purposes, or the fact that that the British Empire became an extension of Christianity with their crusaders and their you know, their projection of influence on the world. Wherever they went, they took their religion with them. Did Spain, by the way, into the New World.
Sure.
And the
Portugal.
You know, at this point now you have the Anglican, which is the British version of Roman Catholicism. That's controlled by the British monarchs, fighting for control of the New World with Gaul, Spain's Roman Catholicism, and yeah, that's they took it with them wherever they went. They were one and the same.
That was just infighting of the same philosophy.
Correct.
They just want to say, "I want to be king."
No, right. It's like Sunni and Shia Muslims.
Yeah, but it's the same nasty animal.
Yes, it is. Correct. And it had its influence on, it grew out as a beast that would tread upon the whole world. And your analysis here, your historical portrait of how Gaul and as Roman Catholicism and Great Britain as Anglican Orthodox Christianity grew to tread upon and divvy up most of the world.
Yeah,
yeah, you're from India, you know, all the way through the Pacific and Asia, and China, and you know, every part of the New World and the Old World. You have an absolute fulfillment of Yahweh's depiction of this beast that would grow out of Rome, treading upon the whole world.
If you control all the ports of China, you control China. You don't have to invade it and occupy
it. Right. Well, it was interesting too. We're talking about intoxication in this prophecy. How did the British Empire ultimately come to subdue China?
Ports. I mean, they
came
opium,
to control. Well, yeah, but what were they taking from and delivering
from
to? Yeah, opium.
And they started
a narcotic. They were drugging
I don't know if they started out to do that. It was a byproduct. They changed it because they had such a they were buying so much tea. They didn't know there were imbalance of payments, and so they started selling them opium, which they could get out of India very easily.
Right.
And next thing you know, they said, "Oh, well, this is a deal.
This is a deal."
And our CIA and our government, they think that's a good deal. We have a war on drugs, so you can support both sides. I mean, it's
correct.
God, we're sick.
It is pretty sick, but there is really very few episodes in human history as perverted as the English in China. Trading opium for tea and controlling a population by drugging them.
Yeah, they weren't that way when they got there.
No. So it's a marvelous depiction of specifically what Yahweh was telling us was going to occur. Because after he went through the four beasts of Babylon becomes Persia, becomes Greece, becomes Rome, and that out of Rome, the fourth beast becomes the most menacing of all beasts, an extension of Rome that treads upon the whole world. You see the religion of Christianity, Roman Catholicism, and its derivatives, Eastern Orthodox Christianity and the Anglican Church of Britain, all treading upon and pummeling and abusing the rest of the world.
Yeah, where can you hide from these people?
No, you can't.
You can't.
You can disassociate with them. You can expose them. You can condemn them. But their influence is worldwide.
Yeah.
You know, there are 1.2 billion Roman Catholics, another 500 million Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox, and other Orthodox strains of Christianity. And then you've got the Anglican Church and the Protestant movement that grew out of it. You know, between all of them, 2.5 billion people, perhaps.
I don't think that's too much of a stretch. I mean,
no.
you can prove that fairly recently.
Yeah. And then you got 1.5 that grew out of Islam as all part of this cadre of what evolved from Palmyra. And, you know, if you look at Palmyra today, too, Palmyra today, at least until about 3 weeks ago, was under the control of socialist secular humanists. It was a UN site. It was sacred to the UN. The people who ran it, who protected it, who promoted it, were socialist secular humanists in conjunction with the United Nations. It's the United Nations that is proclaiming the destruction of these pagan temples as a war crime against humanity. And so what was overtly religious and the epicenter, the intersection of the beast that Yahweh has discussed, became a site controlled by socialist secular humanists to promote socialist secular humanists. It's kind of interesting that,
well,
and so, you know, they're opposed to Christianity, they're opposed, they're an alliance with Islam, but they have no problem embracing pagan temples.
I find it interesting that they protest so much about a building and so little about a human being.
They're not pronouncing it as a war crime the kidnapping and rape of little girls, although they have said, you know, this is a travesty. You don't see them all tied up in their knickers over the little girls who have been kidnapped and are being gang raped and sold in Islamic markets. But the destruction of Palmyra and its two temples to the Lord, that's getting right there close and personal with their God.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of Jimmy Carter's administration. They were trying to develop a neutron bomb, which was fine. It wiped out all the people, but it kept the buildings.
Right.
If that was some beautiful thing to think about.
Right. Yeah. Keep the institutions that are the control mechanism intact.
Later.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. It's
sick.
It is it is indeed a twisted, sick world that we live in, which is why Yahweh, in this prophecy, which follows the destruction of Syria, is bemoaning the religious attitudes of Ephraim, and why he is telling us that we are lost, that we are indoctrinated, that our judgment is impaired. Kirk, I'd like to take a bit of a departure from what we normally talk about in this second hour, just because I find it interesting. You may have heard that Pope Francis, Pope is a name, of course, that was that Roman Catholics took from pagan and imperial Rome. It means father. And Octavian, who became Caesar Augustus, used the term. Caligula used the term. Nero used the term. It was so they were all popes, as is this fellow. He is now saying that that priests have the discretion to forgive. Now, before I tell you what they have the discretion to forgive and when they have the discretion to forgive, when does Yahweh tell us that that a institution or a human has the authority to forgive?
Never.
Like, for example, if you were to besmirch the name of Yahweh. Could I resolve that for you by some prayer or benediction or ceremony?
Some magical words?
Yes, some magic words.
No, there's...
What if you were really, really sorry and there was a confession booth and some holy water and some an exorcism? Could I resolve the problem and pronounce you forgiven based upon my evaluation of your confession and your sincerity?
I would have no clout with Yahweh.
None.
You can say whatever you want, but it
wouldn't matter, would it?
No.
Now, did Yahweh, you suppose that when Yahweh fulfilled Pesach Matzen Bekorim in 33 CE, year 4000 Yah, do you think that he was incapable of resolving our rebellion against him and needed a human institution to take over and to finish the job?
No, he regardless of what Paul said, no.
So this this religious figure is saying that he's giving discretion to his religious underlings for them to forgive, even though the he and his institution have absolutely no authority and no ability whatsoever with Yahweh.
Well, perhaps he's doing it so they can forgive each other for all their multiple crimes.
Right. Now, what he's telling us that he's giving priests the discretion to formally forgive is women who've had an abortion.
Ah.
Now, I would like you to tell me where in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms it says that abortion is a sin.
I didn't bring it up, I don't think.
No. No, there's no discussion of abortion. Doesn't even say that, you know, you shall not take the life of your unborn fetus by, you know, I don't know, whatever manner. Abortion's not in Yahweh's list of bad things to do. Now, I'm not advocating abortion by any means. And Yahweh definitely encourages adoption. He's all about adoption, and he strongly encourages adoption. He adopts us into his covenant family. But the fact of the matter is he doesn't speak out against abortion. And so why would somebody need to be forgiven for abortion? You need to be forgiven for rebelling against God, for believing in false gods, for engaging in religion and politics and patriotism and all those kinds of things.
Yeah, but in order to do that, don't you have to have a relationship with him? You start the relationship with him, and then he'll be okay. Yeah.
If you disassociate from those things, and you walk to him according to the plans and policies that he has laid out, that accept the terms and conditions of the covenant, then he in fact will exonerate you from those things that you have done in the past that are wrong. But I don't find abortion among them.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting.
His plan also seems like a lot better than finding a wrinkly old man to sit and talk to you.
Really. So here you've got giving his priests. And by the way, from Yahweh's perspective, are there priests?
I know.
Well, there were. There
they're
are
lowy,
more.
They're lowy.
Yeah. The lowy.
The
lowy were Cohen, which means
twice away these guys.
Right. The lowy were Cohen. And the Cohen, Lowy means to unite, and Cohen means to minister and serve. And so these individuals were established with a very specific, it's kind of like if the U.S. was actually an honorable country, we realize that everyone who is in politics or the judiciary has sworn an oath to the U.S. Constitution, and their rulings have to be based on the U.S. Constitution. Well, the Lowy, who were the Cohen, the priests, were all swearing an oath to the Torah. And everything they did had to be either helping people understand the Torah or making decisions in people's lives based upon the Torah. And the Roman Catholic Church wholly and completely ignores the Torah. In fact, it's their priests who work on church canon law. One of my favorite people wrote me an email and said, you know, how can you say that abortion, it was written nicer than this, but, you know, why would you say that abortion's not addressed in the Torah, because doesn't the Torah speak about murder, and isn't abortion murder? The Torah does tell us that we should not make a habit of killing. It doesn't specifically say murder, and those who would say that the second commandment, or not the second, but the commandment says, you know, thou shalt not commit murder. That's not what it says. It's the word that is used simply means to kill. And it's written in the imperfect, which means you should not make a habit of killing. So, you know, it's changed to murder so that we can still, Americans can patriotically support their military, which is in the business of killing. It makes people feel good under that circumstance. But no, it's just they should make a habit of killing. Now, etched that in stone. He never once specifically links killing to an unborn child. So this notion that you would make the connection, and it may be valid that I mean, certainly Yahweh was in favor of adoption. for those who want to be adopted and for those who want to adopt. He has all sorts of statements, particularly related to his invitations to meet and to his covenant with adoption. And adoption is the antithesis of abortion. So he's favoring the antithesis of abortion. But you're extrapolating when you make the statement that ending a pregnancy is murder before the child is to the embryo is to the is viable on its own. I'm hugely opposed to abortion. I think Yahweh probably is too, but we're extrapolating at that point.
Well, I think the key thing here is also habit. I mean, if you're making it a habit to go get abortions, I think you got a lot more going on here. You're probably not very Torah observant. I'll just throw it out there.
Yeah, that's true. Yahweh's all about a covenant family. He wants us to bring children into the world that are raised in a family environment and enlightened so that they are brought up on the Torah, so that they will choose to be part of his family. That's his model, and he is hugely in favor of adoption as it relates to both the covenant and to his invitations to meet. An unborn fetus that is not yet to the point of viability outside of the womb, there is no Torah connection that says that's murder. So my only point was that there are lots of things that Yahweh is very concerned about. And us being religious and patriotic and political and these kinds of things are a much bigger issue to him. Negating the importance of his name, not answering his invitations to meet, ignoring the guidance provided by his Torah. These are much bigger issues with Yahweh. And it's interesting, of course, that the Pope would pick abortion as his thing to forgive. That was really my only point. He's going to do it, Kirk. In what he called the holy year. Do you know that the Pope has declared a jubilee, a holy year for next year?
Oh boy!
Wait a minute. Didn't Yahweh establish the Yobel, which has been renamed the Jubilee by Roman Catholicism?
Yep, he's off a good bit, huh?
Yeah. Did he give us the time frame for it?
Yes, sir.
So he established it, and he gave us the timeline for it. The next Yobel, for example, is in 2033, year 6,000 Yah. The Yobel year that is so valuable in our approach to Yahweh was year 4,000 Yah, which was 33 CE. The Yobel are etched in stone. It is it's part of Yahweh's Torah. He established them. Man doesn't establish them. Man doesn't get to choose when they occur. It's Yahweh said it's every 7 times 7 plus 1 year, every 50 years is a Yobel, and he established the purpose for them. And you know something? There's no place in the depiction of the Yobel that Yahweh says, thou shalt forgive abortion. Not once. What's the purpose of the Yobel?
Purpose is to return things back.
Right, so to return back to the land, which means that we return to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden, and that Yahweh returns to Yisrael, which is where he is going to camp out for 1,000 years. So the first is we return to Yahweh, meaning that we leave human institutions and we return back to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden. So that's the first. By the way, I want to reemphasize something we talked about yesterday.
Okay.
Were there any churches in paradise in Eden?
No institutions.
Was there a mosque there?
No.
Was there a priest there?
No priest.
Was there a pastor there?
No.
Was there a Bible there?
No Bible.
Hmm. Was there a crucifix there or cross?
I'm afraid not.
Huh. Was there a Trinity there?
No.
Was there any discussion of religion there?
Never.
Was there a state building and a political institution of some sort?
No, they hadn't done that yet.
Was there a constitution?
No constitution.
So this was, from Yahweh's point of view, it's called the Gan Eden, which is the garden or the enclosure of great joy. And this is the place where Yahweh and Adam, and then later Adam and Chawa and Yahweh, walked, talked, celebrated life. And you're telling me that there were no churches, no mosques, no synagogues, no Bibles, no Qurans, no state institutions, no religious institutions of any kind in Yahweh's depiction of paradise.
No, you'd be totally free. What a dangerous concept.
Wow. Think about what you just said there as well.
Yeah.
You said that they walked, they talked, and they celebrated life.
Yeah, they did.
What religion out there actually celebrates life?
None.
All of them celebrate the death of somebody.
Right, particularly Islam. But think about that. Well, even version of paradise, which he wants to draw us back to. That's what the Obel is all about, coming back to the land. Yahweh's version of paradise has absolutely no vestiges of any kind of religion or politics. So what role could the Christian church play in heaven?
Zip.
None. In fact, heaven, which is represented by the Gan Eden, the enclosure of joy, that heaven is to be rid of those things, to exclude those things. Wasn't it when Adam and Chawa were booted out of the garden that Yahweh ultimately bemoaned creating man because of the religious and political nature of humankind? That was the stuff that was going on outside of the garden. Well, that's really something to think about as you think about this Yobel and the contrast between the church claiming to be at the center of God's teaching and authority when, in fact, in paradise, it was specifically omitted. That's why the walls existed, but to keep it out. Okay, so what's the second aspect of the Yobel? That's the first. To return home.
Well, you set free. You are.
So all slaves are liberated. So you are liberated. But doesn't Christianity say that the Torah enslaves?
Absolutely.
But yet, okay, the purpose of the Yobel is to be liberated. All slaves are freed.
Mm-hmm. What concept?
What a concept. That's, in fact, Yahweh played that same role when he liberated the children of Israel from slavery in the crucible of Egypt in Mitzrayim, of the crucible of human, religious, and political and military oppression, and liberated them, bringing them home to the Promised Land, the living historical portrait of what it means to experience the benefits of the Yobel. And he did so, by the way, by celebrating Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim en route to Shavua, revealing the Torah on Shavua en route. So that's the path to these things. What's the third aspect of the Yobel? You've named the two. There is a third.
Do we say return all forgiven all debts?
That's it. That's the third. Yeah. So you're free. You become free. You come home. And by the way, they aren't really in this order. It's the first is all debts are forgiven, all slaves are freed, and the land is returned, and we come home. So it has to be in that order. But, all debts are forgiven. All debts are forgiven. All of the institutionalized and memorialized crimes that we have committed in opposition to Yahweh are forgiven. We're disassociated from those things. They're expunged from our record, and then we are liberated, not only from them, but freed to engage in a relationship with God as we leave these human institutions that indebted us and corrupted us and enslaved us to the liberation of living with God freely in His home.
Of course, you just put all the priests out of business. You know that.
Right. So that's the purpose of the Yobel. And did Yahweh establish a timetable for these Yobel?
He did, every 50 years.
Seven times seven plus one, right?
One more Sabbath, yeah.
Right. In fact, it's the exact formula for Shavua, isn't it? The celebration of sevens.
Oh, yeah.
It's Shavua is seven times seven plus one from Matzah.
Yeah, so you have something annually to recognize, then you'll...
Right. It's the annual celebration of the Yobel. In fact, there's even a weekly celebration of it, too, called the Shabbat, right? Yeah, the week. So you have a weekly celebration, an annual celebration, and a twice-century celebration of the Yovel. And didn't we figure out that 40, which is the number of times of testing, an interval of a period of testing, that it was exactly 40 Yovel from the time that Adam and Chawa were expelled from perfection, the place without religion, that Yahweh and Abraham affirmed the covenant which brings us back home? Wasn't it exactly 40 Yovel from one to the other?
Absolutely.
It wasn't exactly 40 Yovel from that to that moment on Mount Moriah, where the covenant was affirmed to Yosha, fulfilling Pesach, Matzah, Bekudim, and Shavuah in that same mountain, that exact same place, in year 4000 Yah?
Another milestone, right.
Yeah. And isn't Yahweh going to return in year 6000 Yah, 40 Yovel exactly? From the time that he fulfilled the first four Mikre, and he's going to return on the sixth of seven Mikre, so that he comes back on the day of reconciliations in 2033, year 6000 Yah, and 5 days later, he returns all of Earth to the conditions found in the Garden of Eden. And we celebrate Sukkah, the seventh and final of the Moed Mikre. I think Yah has already established this pattern. Who is the Pope to have his own? This article on the Jubilee says, in church teaching, abortion is such a grave sin that those who procure or perform it incur an automatic excommunication. Yahweh has only one unforgivable sin, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it abortion?
No.
No. Is it killing?
No.
No, it's not an unforgivable sin. Is it bearing false testimony?
No.
Stealing?
None of those.
No, no, nope. Even being religious is not an unforgivable sin. You can be forgiven.
We wouldn't be here.
Yeah, that's right. We wouldn't be here. So we were able to be forgiven for that. There's only one unforgivable sin, and that is to have Yahweh's name be for naught, to diminish the value of Yahweh's name, and to do so in a lifeless manner. Oh, wow. So wasn't the same Roman Catholic Church and a Pope that said that Yahweh's name was never to be used?
Is that?
Well, that is the unforgivable sin that excommunicates somebody from something vastly more important than the church, from the covenant,
mm-hmm.
from Yahweh. So you know why the Roman Catholic Church is opposed to abortion?
Well, it is all those little babies that grow up and be good Catholics.
That's correct, right, because they're losing members and they wanted more members because more members is more money and more power. That is absolutely right.
Just like the Muslims do.
That is right, because they had no problem killing. They were really good. In fact, they were so good at killing that if you want to see how good they were at killing, you should go into a medieval museum and look at the implements of death that the Roman Catholic Church devised. Now, this says, and this is from the Vatican spokesperson, Father Ciro Benedetti. He said, it can usually only be formally forgiven. This is abortion by the chief confessor of a diocese, known as the penitenzier. So you want somebody to be, I guess, the czar of penance. It has to be the chief confessor of a diocese is the only one who can exonerate and recommunicate someone who has performed or has undergone an abortion.
Yeah, forgive my laughing. I know this is serious stuff, but I mean, it's just, I flashed on, who do they think they are, rabbis?
Oh, God. Yeah.
Just reinvent the God.
Yeah, and then reinvent a year based upon the moon. It says Pope Francis on Friday announced that he is convoking a jubilee year to be called the Holy Year. He is a convoking. Who in the hell is he to choose when the Yovel is to be celebrated? Yah chose when the Yovel is to be separated. He celebrated. He gave three purposes that every event that's important to humanity throughout all of time occurred and has occurred and will occur
on
these Yovel.
Don't let Julian off the hook. You know, she had her Yobel.
Oh, God. I'm going to tell you.
Jubilee?
That's right. She did. I'm going to tell you for certain, 2016 is not a Yobel. Absolutely, unequivocally not a Yobel. The next Yobel is 2033. They are 50 years apart.
That's a big clue.
My, oh, my. Once again, the Pope thinking that he has the authorization to ignore and to contradict Yahweh's testimony. Pulsive.
Yeah, who do you think he is, Paul?
Yeah, who do you think he is, Paul? And then he says, let us not forgive that God pardons, and God pardons always. Does God say he always pardons?
No, he says there is an unforgivable sin, which is
right.
Really,
yeah.
Good point.
Yeah, you know, they were the ones that took out you should not make graven images because they had all their graven images, and then they broke apart the coveting instruction to make it two, so there were still ten. They just don't seem to understand that in the second of those statements, the one that they eliminated, that it says that Yahweh's mercy. It says fathers corrupt their children, the second and third generation. Who was it, the spokesperson for this pope? What is the pope himself called?
Oh,
father. Father.
Father.
Father. Fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation. Point that through. And then he says that my mercy is for thousands who observe the terms and conditions of my covenant. Thousands amongst billions is one in a million. It automatically excludes Roman Catholicism. Are you listening? What do you prefer? The edicts of this man and his church, or that of Yahweh and his Torah?